and welcome to the Truth About Public Sector podcast, a spin-off series from the Truth About Local Government podcast, in which I, Hannah Quinn-Hill, will be speaking to lots of public sector people in senior positions to get a better understanding of how their roles in the public sector affect what the everyday person in the community can see and hear, and asking them questions which we all want to know. I am absolutely thrilled in our first podcast to be joined by the fantastic Judith Hughes and to be speaking to her about her role, the organisation she works in, and some key topics involving procurement and healthcare. But before I go any further, and I've got a feeling this one's going to be particularly chatty because Judith and I do love to have a good natter quite regularly. Judith, thank you so much for coming. Would you mind introducing yourself?
Thank you, Hannah. It's my absolute pleasure to be here. I'm Judith Hughes. I'm the Associate Director of Procurement at HQIP, which is Healthcare Quality Improvement Partnership. Bit of a mouthful, hence why we acronym it. I've been at HQIP just over 3 years. I absolutely love procurement, so this podcast is right up my street.
Yeah, we're both procurement nerds. You're a qualified one. I'm just one that likes to step in and hear all about it. So from that perspective, Judith, would you tell us a bit about HQIP, but also what your role in healthcare procurement improvement is?
Yep, absolutely. So HQIP is a not-for-profit healthcare organisation, and our aim is we're basically dedicated to improving health outcomes for all. So my role within that from procurement, so I head up the team, work very, very closely with lots of other areas across the organisation. We have head of patient voice, which is really important for us at HQIP. We dedicate a lot of our time to making sure that voice is throughout the whole of the procurement process. I work across strategic elements. We're looking at, you know, how we can help other organisations sort of, you know, in similar ways to do things what we've been able to do. We're just really, really keen on making sure that everybody can, you know, access the same way that we do procurement in a nice way, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. And I think that's where our relationship first started all that time ago. You and I first started speaking because you are such a passionate voice about patient voice centred procurement and care. And I found that fascinating. As a Salt Clare procurement nerd, I wanted to know all about it. You're a font of knowledge. And that's how we started speaking. So really excited to get stuck into all of that. But before we do, we would be absolutely remiss if we didn't mention the Procurement Act, because Procurement Act 2023 is going live finally this month. So the first question that I have for you really is the new Procurement Act, lots of significant changes within that new legislation and way of working. In your opinion, Judith, what are the biggest shifts in public sector procurement that we and the wider public need to be prepared for and procurement professionals need to think about?
Yep, no procurement chat at the moment is a chat if you don't talk about the Procurement Act. So in my opinion, I think teams really need to focus on three areas. The first one is around that preliminary market engagement. Even though that element was in or is in the public contract regulations, I think there's more of an onus on it now. And it's, you know, it's setting out the needs and the benefits. It's really using that engagement with your providers to, you know, sort of set out exactly what you want to do. It's going to be a really, really powerful tool, in my opinion. You know, providers are then armed with the right information. Mm-hmm. And again, linking back to the patient voice for us, it's a way of linking that patient voice even further into the procurement. Again, it sets up that provider understanding how important the patient is. So for HQIP, it's really important, but I think it's important for others. The second one is the new notice requirements. So this is one of the biggest step changes under the Act. And I think we all know they're there, but until you start doing it, you're not going to really understand the burden. So it's making sure you understand when you've got to do those, building it into your procurement plans. And the last one then, I think, for me is the assessment summaries. Mm-hmm. So that's the old sort of standstill letter, similar to the standstill letter, but for me, not quite as much. I think there's more of an onus on evaluator commentary for the assessment summaries. And much as I love the evaluators, you don't always get the best commentary out of them. So I think it's really key that we look at that and make sure we're training the evaluators as well as our stakeholders on the Procurement Act.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's that pre-market engagement that everybody's been talking about a lot, and that I think, and we'll get into more conversation about it shortly, that's really important in patient voice procurement, particularly about understanding what's realistic, what can be provided by suppliers, what can't, and how that works, and what difference that will make to yep. patients and the community using the product or the service that's being procured. Thank you so much for that answer. So
that's okay.
How is HQIP preparing for the Procurement Act?
If you spoke to anybody in HQIP, they're probably sick of me every all staff meeting and every meeting that I go to saying, okay, the Procurement Act's coming. So we did a procurement masterclass a couple of weeks ago. Everybody came to it. I have to admit, it was fantastic, really engaging. So we've brought the stakeholders on board because that is absolutely crucial. We're going to do similar sort of training for our provider group so that they're aware of the changes. You know, the Procurement Act is going to bring challenges, and it does introduce new logistics for people. And what we've done, we've got a procurement tool like a procurement plan that we've used. And it goes back to my point earlier about the notices. We've built that now into the plan. So it's not going to be, oh, hang on a second, we didn't publish that notice, because when we go back and look at the plan, it's all there. So we're preparing, you know, we've amended our policies, we've amended our documentation, we've attended, I would think, every single Procurement Act seminar, webinar going. We've done the Cabinet Office training, we're practitioner trained. So I say we're ready. And I think we're possibly going to be one of the first contracting authorities to go live. We've actually got a tender to go live a couple of days after the Procurement Act goes live. Great timing.
Brilliant, brilliant. And I think actually one of the things I love about your team and HQIP as a whole is how engaged you all are in terms of not just the preparedness and the templates and the documentation, but also how engaged you are as partners for business. You know, you are really excited to get on the phone, have those meetings, talk to the stakeholders to really understand. And it's that skill set that isn't trained in procurement that your team have that's going to make the difference for you when this goes live, I think, anyway.
No, I agree. It's the passion. You know, this is going to be the third round of procurement regulations that I've sat through, giving away a bit of my age there. But it's that sharing of knowledge. You have to share the knowledge. You have to be willing to bring people on that journey. Otherwise, you're just going to hit a wall of people not being engaged because they don't understand.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so that kind of leads me on nicely to the next question. So you mentioned challenges. Are there any challenges that you're anticipating that you've had to build into this, what sounds like fantastic procurement that's going to go live 3 days after the Procurement Act is formally gone out?
I wouldn't necessarily call it a challenge. I mean, you're always going to dot the I's and cross the T's. That's part and parcel of running any robust procurement process. But there is that slight nervousness that, you know, are we doing it right? But we know we're doing it right because in lots of ways, lots of things haven't changed. So I think it's just making sure that, you know, we've done everything that's required of us under the Act.
Yeah.
And it's double checking, going back, getting somebody else to look at it for you. Because sometimes when you stare at something for so long, you can't see the wood for the trees.
Yeah.
So it's maybe having a peer review, and we do that internally. So if one of my colleagues has run a procurement or running a procurement process, somebody else in the team will actually pick up what they're doing and say, right, let me just have a look at it. And not to see if there's any errors, because, well, I'd be gobsmacked if there was. But I think that's the challenge. It's check, double check, treble check, just to, you know, make sure that what you're doing is right, especially for those first couple of tenders. I think that's the biggest challenge. And just making sure that, you know, you refer back to the Act. What is the Act requiring of me to do? I actually have a printed copy of the Act, sad individual that I am, with little like a post-it note sticking out of it with the key regulations. So, yeah, I'm nerdy like that too.
Fantastic bedtime reading in case struggling to drop off. So a slight change of pace in the questions now, because your organisation, you are considered patient voice experts. That is what you guys are known for in the market. Yep. It's why the big scale organisations work with you. And so my next question is about patient voice and public procurement. HQIP places a really strong emphasis on the importance of patient and public voice. It's, you know, it's one of the same, isn't it? It's that community voice. How does this, or how should it, influence procurement decisions? And actually thinking about our wider public sector audience, what is patient voice to begin with?
So the patient voice for HQIP, we actually have a set of patients that are, I would say, partner with us. They have lived experience. So if you're procuring, let me give you an example. So if we were procuring a cancer audit, we would engage with patients who have lived experience of cancer. They come in, they'll talk about their experiences, good, bad and ugly, on the care that they've received at the hospital that they're going to. And then we use that to actually improve the services. So their voice, you know, at the end of the day, don't get me wrong, clinicians and stakeholders are fantastic, but they're not living the experience.
Yeah.
So who better to engage on healthcare services than the patient themselves? You know, so we bring those patients in. And if we're doing a particular project that we don't have patients experience for, we've got over 100 patients, so it's possibly unlikely, but there will always be a particular project that we don't have. We will use all of our resources. We'll talk to other charities. We'll potentially do some advertising to actually bring those patients in and actually work with them. And that ultimately is what the patient voice is. You know, it's smarter procurement. It's bringing, you know, there's better solutions, actually focusing on what the patients want and need. There's room for innovation. You know, it's using that patient to actually look at the innovation, diverse needs, diverse input, and ultimately a reduction in NHS burden. You know, is that not, you know, a couple of forums that I've been to lately, that's a big thing, is, you know, releasing NHS burden. And if we're talking about, you know, improving patient outcomes, again, going back to my point, surely the patient or the public person, it doesn't have to be a patient, because not every procurement is for healthcare. So you can look at what the procurement is for and see who are your key stakeholders externally, not internally. So for us, it begins from the outset. We involve the patients in our spec development meetings. They're involved in helping set up deliverables that the provider is going to have to adhere to. We involve them in contract management. So we talk to them to say, right, you know, we're having a contract management meeting for you now that the services are going ahead. What do you see different? Is anything changing? And we'll bring again, it's not always going back to the provider and saying, you're not doing this properly. Sometimes it's actually going back to the provider and saying, well done. Yeah. You've actually made a difference. The patients we're speaking to are appreciative of what you've done. They feel like their voice has been listened to. And it just helps shape that procurement process and the decisions and the award.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, there's nothing more valuable than a lived experience, and remembering that, you know, as a procurement professional, everything you do in a public sector organisation is going to affect a member of your community. you know, that's the ultimate end product, isn't it? Is that it's going to affect somebody, whether you're at local authority, higher education provider, NHS, whatever that is, there is a person at the end of that procurement that's going to be affected by it. And so
100%.
The way that you and HQIP have developed a way to include that in your procurements is phenomenal. It's something that we know needs to be rolled out. It's been written in numerous white papers produced by central government, numerous reports. It's the front of the agenda for most organisations. It's pivotal.
Absolutely, it's pivotal. And it's becoming more and more so. You know, Lord Darzi had it in his report. It's in the 10-year NHS plan. We're working with different organisations to help them embed it. I think it's, you know, again, conferences that I've been to, there's been several talks on the main stages about the patient voice. So I'm pleased that, you believe that HQIP are at the forefront. We have the experience of doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you gave a small example earlier in terms of, you know, if it's to do with a cancer care procurement. Have you got an example that you can share where patient involvement has impacted the procurement strategy directly and the results of it?
Yeah, I can do that for you. So as I said, we've been embedding and engaging with patients for well over 8 years now. So we've actually, you know, seen it go through that journey. And I think we are right at that cusp of just being able to see those changes come through. And we've seen national policy changes happening because of the work that we do. And it's stemming from the work that the providers have undertaken from the procurement. And a really good example is the National Child Mortality Data Audit. So it's a really sensitive subject, but the changes that have actually come from that, as I say, policy changes, because of the procurement and the way that the providers have delivered the work, they're the changes you see. Our commission of and the audit of Epilepsy 12, that led to successful adaptation of the data set to include mental health, education, transition. You know, we've seen the engagement move to be more involving children and young people. So it really does change, because that's what the patient and the public want. You know, at the end of the day, they're paying for that service through being a taxpayer.
Yeah.
So ultimately, we want to try and ensure that we do that. And what we do with our procurements as well, we future-proof them. We build in aspirational intent, because a lot of our work is through NHS England, mm-hmm. and money's tight. So we go out to tender and they might say, if we had extra money, we'd like to do X, Y, and Z. But mm-hmm. if I don't build that into the tender at the outset, I then can't build it into the tender, say in a year's time or 2 years' time when money does come available. So we build in aspirational intent into our work as well. And I think that, again, has a huge difference, because things that you'd like, I mean, if we had all the money in the world, you know, we'd add every single thing in. But with the best will in the world, we can't do that. So it does make for change coming in the future. And again, that builds back to, you know, how it impacts patients.
Yeah. And I think you've hit quite a few nails on the head there with that, because there's so much there that we could dig into further if we had all the time in the world to talk about, you know, the fact that what you do and what procurement professionals do is impacting areas of life that people find very sensitive, that yeah. mental health and well-being often isn't taken into account in these projects. Because you're looking at a specific care process. So the fact that that's been built in is fantastic. And engaging as a business partner, a procurement business partner, to understand the full life cycle and potential future aspirational development of a procurement is why stakeholders should engage with their procurement teams from the offset, you know, why they should include them in, they should be part of a PMO. But that's a completely separate project that I could go on about for hours. So you've also talked about in the community and the fact that, you know, yes, you do a lot of work with NHS England and healthcare and providers. But beyond healthcare, do you think patient-focused procurement could or should be applicable in other areas of the public sector?
Absolutely. It's pivotal to drive that change, you know, just like in healthcare, involving those that feed into those services and those that call off of those services, regardless of what they are, whether you're an NHS trust or you work at a local authority. I've worked in several local authorities where we actually have involved the public. You know, by having that sort of focused procurement, again, it goes back to what I was saying about how the ultimate design of the procurement and the services, you want them fit for purpose. You want them to be effective. A lot of money and time, resource, goes into procurement. So using the tools that you've got outside of your organisation to help design that, why should it just be healthcare? It shouldn't. It doesn't have to just be healthcare. You know, it leads to that long-term value by getting it right first time, for want of a better expression.
Yeah, I totally agree. Oh, of course, I agree with you. I totally agree.
I paid you well.
Do you think there's enough awareness in procurement teams about the importance of patient or public involvement?
Unfortunately, it remains quite limited, to be honest. And I think in some cases, procurement teams see it as a burden. I think they see it that it's just too hard to try and do that. You know, us healthcare, or just wider than just healthcare procurement professionals, we're juggling so many responsibilities, trying to, you know, sometimes fit that square peg into that round hole. And the idea that, oh, do you know what, let me just throw adding the patient voice or the public voice into what you're doing, you know, can just be, I suppose, intimidating for people. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, I think you'd actually be surprised, and organisations would be surprised, at how, I don't know if easy the word could be, maybe, you know, it is good to integrate it. And it's something that, you know, you have to, it's not every single procurement you're going to use it for. That's the first thing to look at. Yeah. You know, you're not going to suddenly look at your procurement plan and go, every single one of those procurements needs the patient voice or the public voice. It doesn't. It's going to be on a case by case basis and where you really need that voice. You know, the engagement can help with decision making. It can help with understanding things that you wouldn't have even thought of that a patient could come up with, and you'd be like, wow, hadn't even considered that. Because unless you are the patient and you're working in procurement, which would be great, I suppose, you'd have a patient procurement professional, a bit like clinical procurement professional. It's a journey. Yeah. You know, you've got to take it step by step. You've got to pause at each step and understand the impact. What's this going to mean going forward? How am I going to manage it within the contract? Because sometimes as well, procurement don't manage the contract. You run the tender and then you pass that contract over to somebody else. So it's looking at that and understanding that as well.
Yeah, I think that's, again, really good point in terms of trying to build that in into the right procurement, into the right requirements, but also why it's so pivotal for stakeholders to engage with procurement as soon as possible. Yes. When they're thinking about going to market, because it's at that point you need to know, are we going to include patient or public voice in our procurement, and how can we do it? Because it does affect timeframes. You know, ultimately, if you're going to do it, the more stakeholders, the more involvement you have, it does affect that. And I think when procurement professionals are in a position where they, you know, they are so transactional because of the level of the amount of spend and procurements going across their desk, as it were, that they need to be able to plan that out. They need to be able to project manage that appropriately, don't they?
They do. And, you know, my advice would be take a real key procurement and say, do you know what, we're actually going to build that patient public voice into this. Almost run it as a pilot trial within your organisation, and put the time in and say, right, do you know, for this one, we're actually going to build in an extra however many weeks to you know, do this properly. And it, I can't say it enough, you have to bring the stakeholders on that journey. Yeah. Because it'll always be, I want it tomorrow. and procurement are seen as the blocker. Well, you can't have it tomorrow because due process needs to be followed. So if you are, like you say, engaging with your procurement team early on, that's when your procurement team can really add value and sort of say, you know, hang on a second, look at what we could do here.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that almost answers how can a procurement professional balance the regulatory compliance, the cost effectiveness, and the need to incorporate diverse stakeholder voices?
Yeah, it does go back a lot. It's having that clear strategic plan.
Yeah.
You know, it's having a clear understanding of what the procurement requirements are. Mm. It's having a project plan so that, you know each step that you're going to go through. Like I said, it's bringing the stakeholders along the journey and involving them the whole way along. Not, oh, well, you're only evaluating, so, you know, you don't need to worry about anything else, just evaluate it. But if they don't know what it is that you've gone out to procurement for or tender for, how are they supposed to evaluate it? So, you know, break it into manageable steps, like I said earlier. You know, take a pause at each step and sort of look and go, right, is this compliant? Is it cost effective? Is it, you know, involving the right stakeholders? You sometimes have to sort of step back and smell the roses sometimes. And I think, you know, I can't say it enough, involving those diverse stakeholders creates that ultimate service that you want delivered and they want delivered as well.
Yes. Yeah. And then you touched on it earlier as well when you were talking about the Procurement Act in terms of, you know, setting the temperature in the organisation at the top. You know, if it is a priority for the organisation that patient or public voice is included in the procurements, that needs to come down from the board. It needs to come filtering down through the heads of department that is a priority. And that does sometimes take a little bit more time, but we're going to map it properly. We're going to approach it properly and we're going to make sure it works to the benefit of everybody.
And that, again, goes back to try it on one procurement. Then you can bring back the benefits to the board, to your senior leadership team to say, look, we've done this. Look at the outcomes. Look at the change. Look at what's happened. And that might take a little time to see that. But I think people have the misconception that if we involve the patients, it's going to take time. It's going to cost extra money. You know, there's a legal risk to us involving a patient. I'm not suggesting that people ask a patient to evaluate a tender. They don't have to do that. We're lucky enough that we have a head of patient engagement and she liaises with the patients. And through their voice, she evaluates. Not every organisation has a Kim, unfortunately. We're very, very lucky to have Kim. But you can still embed the patient voice without them necessarily having to evaluate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sad, but this is the final question now, Judith. Looking ahead, what trends or innovations do you think will shape public sector procurement in the next 5 years? Is it that everybody will want a Kim? You know, what will that look like?
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be fantastic. I think one of the biggest things you're going to see, and it's already coming, is the use of AI.
Yeah.
So it's going to revolutionise public sector procurement. It really is. We're trying to look at it ourselves. You know, it's the administrative burden that we've got on us, especially with the new act coming in. You know, it could alleviate some of that. It will streamline and automate data analysis, which is a big thing. You know, the data is a huge thing. So to be able to release some of that burden, I think is, you know, key. Social value, you know, unfortunately, I think a lot of people look at social value as a tick box.
Yeah.
And that really frustrates me, I have to say, because across all sectors, we are key to actually driving social value within a procurement realm. You know, we can deliver all the metrics that are required of us and involving that patient voice. You know, dare I say it, it's not a tick box exercise, but there are metrics that by involving the patient voice that you can actually, you know, use to say the patient, by involving the patient voice, we've done this and that and the other, and you can measure it. And the last thing I see is training. I think a lot of procurement professionals are going to, that's what they're going to want to see. They're going to want organisations that are going to invest in them. They're going to want to see what training plans are in place when they apply for a job. Mm. They want that career progression. So to get the career progression, you need to have the right tools and the right training to be able to, you know, move yourself forward. So I think there's going to be a lot of that. And I think ultimately, you know, procurement teams that embrace that AI, social value, training requirements, they're the ones that are going to be best positioned to succeed. They're the ones that are going to be able to bring the right people in and retain them. That's a big thing. It's the retaining of staff. And I know that NHS England have got a huge training plan going on at the moment. They're doing a survey, so to try and understand the training needs. You know, HQIP would love to be part of that. So, I think that's what I think is going to change in the next 5 years. 5 years, it's going to blink and you miss it.
It does. It does. And I, everything you've said there, I reflect on the last 10 years of working with public sector procurement professionals. And that is coming through loud and clear, everything you've said. So, you know, the AI adoption and releasing that burden, it doesn't mean that we won't need procurement professionals.
Yeah.
What it means is that procurement professionals can partner with the business. They can get to know their organisation and their stakeholders. The problem that you've identified, absolutely right, is the skills aren't there. You know, there's mm-hmm. there is no formal training on how to be a good procurement business partner and to engage with your stakeholders on that level and to gain that credibility and trust from the offset. And that is what we hear. I speak to procurement professionals every day about professional development and the reason that they're moving on from organisations because they don't feel they're getting that development, they're not getting that support and that skill share. So I think that HQIP is on the ball. I think that you are absolutely right in everything you said. For the full conversation, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you so much, Judith, for being my very first official podcast interview for The Truth About Public Sector. If anyone who's listened to this podcast would like to hear more about HQIP, the amazing work that they do as a not-for-profit organisation, the amazing work that Judith and her team do, we will ensure that there is a link in the information with this post so that you can reach out and have a look at that. Or if you are a professional in the public sector who has something that you would like to speak about that you feel is important, that the public can learn from and understand better, please reach out and let us know. Thank you very much.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you.